listening to the Nerds Assemble podcast.
Hello, it's May the 4th, and this is episode 134 of this very Star Wars-themed Nerds Assemble podcast. I'm Emily.
I'm Paul.
I'm Paul, a.k.a. Cookie.
And I'm Retro, yes!
As ever, if you want to comment on the show or, you know, send us a message or anything, you can do so via Twitter at nerdspodcast. You can send us an email via contact at nerdsassemble.co.uk. This is a very Star Wars themed episode, as I've said.
Happy Star Wars Day.
We mentioned a few weeks ago, and tried to remind you, dear folks, that we were going to all watch the Star Wars films in what's known as the Machete Order. We've all accomplished this, yes?
Yes.
Yep.
Yep. Yep. Okay. So, the Machete Order, I mean, if you want to stop listening to us,
Films. Don't stop listening.
And then come back to us. The Machete Order is watching the films as following. Episode 4, Episode 5, followed by Episode 2, Episode 3, and then going back to Episode 6. Episode 1 is not included.
Good.
Shucks.
Because it pretty much adds nothing to
Cause
the story.
Because it only adds Misa Jar Jar Binks. Yes.
In fact, it takes from you.
Yeah, it takes a bit of your time on this earth by watching it.
I think the only thing I missed was the fight at the end. The lightsaber duel, because that was really cool, well choreographed. I like that.
You kind of cut out Qui-Gon Jinn altogether, really.
Yeah, but then it's not even like he appears as.
No, he doesn't appear as a ghost or anything. I think he's referenced once in episode 2.
Yeah.
That's
about it. Is that either that or just have like this really hacked up episode 1? You just kind of like
just have the fight scene at the end.
Yeah.
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 And then like Qui-Gon's ghost and that's it. That'd be fine.
Qui-Gon doesn't appear as a ghost though, does he?
No.
What is he?
No. Once he's gone, he's gone.
Well, there we go. Even worse.
But is he?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll get onto that later, but he's not.
Oh, you see.
I think perhaps the most important question we need to ask ourselves right now is, out of these 5 films, which were our favourite, or which was our favourite?
Empire Retroid. Strikes Back.
I was going to do it one by one. So your Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah. Okay.
Retroid?
It's probably Empire, yes. I think it's very close between A New Hope and Empire, but yeah, I'd say Empire.
Okay.
I think I'm probably going to go New Hope.
Yeah, New Hope.
Yeah.
I'm Return of the Jedi.
See, that always used to be
your
my
Return
favorite
of the
as a kid.
Jedi. Hope you got its receipt.
Oh, yeah. Don't worry.
That was always my favorite as a kid growing up.
Which one?
Return of the Jedi.
Okay. Is that because
now I'm older? Now I'm older. I actually prefer the dark subtlety of Empire Strikes Back. It's got a bit more meat to it.
It's that whole dark second part of the saga, isn't it? Really?
Yeah.
That I was mentioning definitely. The other week. That always seems to happen.
I think Empire is we can do this as more or less a two-parter and end a film on a cliffhanger, which didn't happen that often. It's doing it right.
Yeah.
It builds up the story and leaves it all hands up in the air.
It doesn't feel like it just stops.
No, like, you feel like it's been set up for something.
Yeah. It's like, oh, I can't wait until the next bit.
Absolutely.
I liked the start of Return of the Jedi far more than the start of Empire because I liked
the sail barge.
I liked the sort of the dark place that everyone starts in. It's just like, it's all a bit desperate. It's all a bit sort of disjointed. They need to get the band back together, and go kick some ass, but it's going to take more than just, you know, running around asking for favours in order to get the band back together. I know it's some bad Blues Brothers references, but yeah.
It does make me think just how long is it meant to actually span between episode 4 and episode 6? How long is that actually meant to be?
It's only a couple of years, I think, isn't it?
I'm not sure if it's ever, well, it's never said in the films, is it?
No, it's not. Like how much the passage of time is. Time is weird in the Star Wars films, apart from sort of in the prequels when you obviously had the obvious signs of characters, well, Anakin aging, and that was about it. Otherwise, it's kind of like this weird condensed or stretchy mess depending on what they're trying to do with it at the time.
Although, saying that, there was something in episode 6 that made what happened in episode
3 years
go completely doolally. And that's that towards the end of Return of the Jedi, Luke actually asks Leia, you know, sort of like, oh, do you remember your mom? And she's like, oh, yes, but she died when I was very young. It's like, no, she died.
Extraordinarily young.
But I remember the kindness that she had, and it's like, what? You were literally a baby.
And it's literally also, I remember the really terrible taste in men she had. I mean, bloody awful. I mean, Jesus Christ, what was she thinking?
Absolutely. I mean, he really did come off as really creepy in episode 2. Anakin.
Mm. Really incredibly. And they'd say, oh, yes, you were a little boy. You'll always be the little boy to me, apart from when I let you into me bed, which is a really, really fucking weird. It's just, he had restraining order written all over him.
Absolutely. I mean, some of the looks that he gave her, and it's like, he almost like, you know, incredibly kind of date rapey.
Yeah, it just, oh, shouldn't you be keeping an eye on you know, Padme, and he'd say, I don't think she likes me watching. Yeah, I'm not surprised, mate. Because you are creeping everyone out.
It's all right, he's got his Jedi mind trick to just smooth the way.
I mean, I noticed, I think it was episode 2, where they're actually sat down for tea, and Anakin basically just steals, like, this piece of fruit from a plate, you know, using the Force, chops it up and gives her the smaller half, and it's like,
you ass.
Yeah. What an asshole.
That's my bloody pear. Give it back. I like pears.
Exactly.
Get out. Do not screw with fruit.
I mean, it's just absolutely ridiculous. I mean, I really don't get what he was trying to do with episode 3 and, like, hey, by the way, your wife's going to die in, you know, kind of labour unless you, you know, figure out how to save her, you know, using the dark side. And it's like,
yeah,
right, okay, so the guy that's turning into the dark side, oh yeah, basically he's kind of gone a bit doolally. You know this, but you're still going to stick with it.
Hey, you know this murderous side of the Force? Well, it can do nice things as well. So, you know, for the gullible. Is it really? Can it? Is that in the dictionary? You say, no, global isn't in the dictionary, and I can trust me on this.
And it's like when he comes out of, like, the chamber as Darth Vader, and the Emperor kind of informs him, oh, by the way, you know, Padme's dead because you killed her out of your anger. It's like, right, so Darth Vader's just coming out now of the transformation. He listens to this. Why doesn't he go, hold on, why was I turned to the dark side? Oh, yeah, it was you, you little fucking git. And then Force choking or something.
Yeah.
But then, in Empire Strikes Back, it does look like he's got a game plan of trying to take over the Empire by getting rid of the Emperor. Because he actually turns around to Luke and asks him to join him, doesn't he?
Yeah.
So he does seem to have that sort of revenge trait already there.
It's just how much that, you know, I know of, you know, the sort of Star Wars mythos from books, you know, comics, games and such. How much of it was added and how much of it was, in like the, you know, idea Bible that George Lucas presumably had at one point. Things like, because, you know, the Sith are supposed to advance by killing their master.
Yes.
It's sort of like, you know, the ultimate natural selection. If they can kill their master, then they're, you know, they're worthy of taking over. And of course, if they can't kill their master, then they weren't good enough. So get another apprentice.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, that's a bit weird, but okay. I mean, at what point?
To be fair, it's all about evil, isn't it? So it's not really weird.
At what point is it like, oh, by the way, Anakin, you're going to have to kill me at some point? You know, Darth Vader, yeah, you're not a master yet. You know, you have to kind of kill me before you get to that.
Yeah.
What?
Sort of, you know, take him out, give him a few drinks, turn your phone off vibrate so he doesn't, you know, surprise me. Stupid.
Yeah, and is that just, the Emperor texting you? It's like,
yes.
By the way, Retroid.
Yes.
You do realise that you're going to have to kill me in order to become a master.
I say, I'm fine with that, you're a wanker.
I found it kind of weird how, in the way the training situation was put forward in the prequels, that, like, to become a Jedi Master, you didn't really have to be subservient to anyone really for any prolonged period of time. It's like you complete your training, show that you're not too much of a dick, and we'll let you, I mean, be a master. Whereas the whole situation with, you know, the Emperor and all that shit, it's like, you're so subservient. Like, why do you want, do you put up with this bullshit for so long? Why? You were, like, Anakin was like, oh, pissed off that I've been made a master. And it's like, well, you could have just stayed a Jedi and then, you know, no?
I think in quite a few of the graphic novels and comic books I've read, sort of bridging the gaps between the prequels and the original trilogy, the Emperor actually seems to be keeping him at very far away from him, putting him on, arm's length, sending him on other missions and stuff.
Well, yeah, because he could probably...
Because, I mean, even in Star Wars Episode 4, Darth Vader's really there as an attendant on the Star Destroyer.
Mm.
As Lord Vader, he's not around the Emperor at all. It's not until Empire Strikes Back that you really see the Emperor, and that's just on a communication. And then it's not until 6 when everything seems to be falling into the Emperor's lap, where he actually joins Darth Vader on the bridge of the Death Star.
I do wonder if he didn't spend that much time around him because actually he was partially afraid.
Probably.
Because, like, if Vader was actually close to him, he might actually see through his machinations a bit more and just kind of be like, I don't have to put up with this bullshit. Bye bye. Yeah.
there's one thing that also got me. Right. Basically, because I noticed that it wasn't just Obi-Wan Kenobi that's just vanished.
Hmm.
It was also Yoda that literally just vanished when he died. And it's like, well, do Jedi's just vanish rather than, you know, actually leave a body? Or is that meant to be kind of part of, you know, the Jedi thing?
Maybe
they're the ultimate recycling.
They become pure force and just dissipate into the universe.
They do become one of the force, but originally in the books, spoiler alert, in the novel for Star Wars Episode 3, for the prequels, I actually read the novel before I saw the film, and it actually had interactions with Yoda and Qui-Gon as his ghost entity, and it's Qui-Gon who has actually learned how to become one with the Force and become a ghost apparition. He's the first Jedi to do it, according to the book. All right. And at the end, you actually have Yoda... This ties into Episode 4, because when he sends Obi-Wan to Tatooine, it's not just to keep an eye on Luke, but it's also to train with Qui-Gon to harness this new power in the Force.
I was a bit gutted that
wasn't in the third film.
Yeah, I suppose the advantage of actually having ghosty Jedis around is that if somebody with... Because the problem is they're pretty much extinct by that point as a force in the universe anyway. So you would kind of... need to be able to come back from the afterlife a little bit, just to give some guidance to the few newbies that might emerge.
I mean, I have to admit, you know, it's like at, and on the second one, You know, Empire Strikes Back, and Obi-Wan Kenobi kind of turns up in ghost form and says, "Oh, sorry, I can't help you if you choose to face him." It's like, yes, yeah. You could. You could basically, you know, go near him and then go in his ear to distract him. Well, you know, Luke chops his head off. What?
Excellent.
That's so, could have helped him.
There is another reason why I think that the Emperor kept him at arm's length as well, because he actually, in following on from the original trilogy, I've read quite a few of the books afterwards, and it turns out the Emperor has another dark apprentice.
He's got a love child!
pretty much, her name's Mara Jade, and she's actually the Emperor's chief assassin, who is trained in the dark ways of the Force.
I recognise that name, yeah.
Yeah, because she becomes married to Luke Skywalker.
Boom,
boom.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. Yeah.
She's a good guy. She becomes a good guy.
Presumably is something that they'll love changed for Episode 7, because they've said that the expanded universe doesn't count now.
Well, yes. But let's not go down that dark route and let me lose my temper. Because she would have been an awesome character in it.
I mean, you mentioned the Leia saying, "Yeah, I knew my mum."
Yeah.
Mm.
There was also Obi-Wan saying that when he first met Anakin, he was already an impressive young man, and then he took him under his, you know, wing and trained him in the ways of the Force.
Yes.
And, no, he was a white little shit.
He just happened to be very good at pod racing.
No, he wasn't. That film does not exist, remember?
Oh, yeah, sorry. Yeah, that
he becomes
doesn't exist.
Just a troubled teenager.
No, not troubled.
You think
a wanker. An arsehole stalky wanker.
Stalky wanker.
And say, oh, let's train him because he doesn't have any obvious character flaws just because he's whining away and saying, need more power. And why doesn't anyone take me seriously? It's because you're a little gobshite, that's why.
I mean, it's just the fact that, you know, 1 minute is kind of complaining that he's so superior to absolutely everybody else, and then the next minute is like, oh, yeah, the Jedi are my family.
I was honestly trying to work out whether it was the writing in the prequels.
Mm.
Because going back from, you know, watching New Hope and then watching Empire Strikes Back and, you know, ending at that moment with the, oh, no, everything's in flux and, you know, lost Han and... I mean, Luke's lost his hand.
Hmm.
All of that. And then you go to Episode 2, and it's honestly like watching a fan film.
The writing did seem to go down a bit.
I mean,
I always thought they spent way too much on the special effects. Spent too much attention to the special effects than Ryan.
Hmm.
Whereas in the original trilogy, special effects would only get you so far. You had to have a good hook.
I think there was a definite change in structure between those films, of which, remember, Empire Strikes Back was not directed or written by Lucas.
No.
Story by George Lucas. And you could tell. The original Star Wars films had a very sort of punchy structure to them.
Yes.
They were very lean in that. It's like, yes, they jumped from one place to another, but they did it with purpose.
Hmm.
Whereas with the prequels, they just seem to be very
disjointed,
swollen, and yeah, just it just went, it just wandered.
I do think that they tried to cram in too many locations and too many battle scenes into the first, into the
prequels.
I think if there's one thing I enjoy about the prequels compared to the original after watching them, it would have to be the choreography of the lightsaber battles. That's about it.
Yeah, I mean, in comparison, the original trilogy, the battles were like, they don't seem like, you know, masters of the lightsaber.
Well, about it in terms of the way stage fighting was going in cinema at the time, like, you're talking like the 70s and the early 80s and the influences of like Hong Kong cinema and the martial arts there, hadn't quite broken through into Hollywood yet. And the closest they had was year-old swashbuckling kind of pirate films and stuff. Yeah.
Well, that was pretty much what George Lucas wanted, wasn't it?
Yeah, pirates pretty much, yeah.
I mean, laser swords and, you know, swinging from one place to another and rescuing princesses and things like that.
Don't get me wrong, there's nothing wrong with it, but I just think that's the only thing I can physically see has improved.
I would agree up until a point, which was watching the prequels. The Jedi were shit, weren't they?
They were a bit, actually. I mean, it's like they could see
Samuel L. Jackson was not shit.
They could deflect laser blasts and whatnot. But as soon as it come to the clone troopers actually turning on them, they were like, "Oh, what?"
Well, and I'm thinking
died almost instantly.
Even in Episode 2, when they had that arena battle with the Jedi turning up,
in the arena, there seemed to be so many of them packed around the edge, and then sort of like it gets towards the end, and there's just like a tiny group of them left.
You lot are supposed to be the peacekeepers slash negotiators, you know, whatever, of a galaxy. And you get in one arena and you lose about half your numbers.
Mm. Yeah. I think the best fight I've seen in Episode 2 was Yoda versus Count Dooku.
I'm still mixed with that. I kind of like it, but another part of me thinks, the CG wasn't quite there.
That just a point of Episode 2, though, the main thing in that just doesn't make any sense is that jump Leia has.
Padme
has to the back of that beast that's running around with Anakin on its back. And it's like, you couldn't do... There was no sign that she was helped down with the Force or anything. She just jumped. Mm. And I don't think she would have felt very well after that.
Well, she's got force fields or something.
But put it this way, it's lucky that she had padding. Luke and Leia after that.
Yeah,
it's like, oh Jesus, that hurts. Oh, just looking at it looked really painful.
It's just the fact that the first thing that she did afterwards was like kiss Anakin. It was like, let's go.
Yeah, I think
did that not hurt?
The first thing anyone else would do if they jumped that far down and landed with, you know, their legs apart like that on the back, you know, bare back of a creature.
That seems to be made out of pure bone.
Yeah, would probably just be to go and fall off.
Yeah.
And next thing, it would be Elvis in the cast.
But no, I think one of the reasons why a lot of the visual effects in terms of kind of the creatures and whatnot in the first, prequel trilogy didn't work was because that they were animated and they didn't feel like they moved correctly for me.
Yeah, pretty much everything that they tried to do didn't look right.
Mm.
Everything looked like it was slightly like a couple of millimeters on the screen away from like moonwalking, because they was just that little bit above the surface, just not quite connected with the world as they needed to be. Kind of like watching polygons in like sort of older 3D video games.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. It they just looked superimposed.
The perfect example is when you compare Jabba the Hutt in Return of the Jedi to Jabba in Star Wars Episode 4.
Mm.
Yeah. Definitely. Which, he just looks shit.
Yeah.
It's kind of nice that they put that scene back in, but it didn't really need it, and he just doesn't look that good.
Mm. He certainly looks half the Hutt that he was in Star Trek 6.
Yeah, I've just remembered, a week or two ago, I stumbled across a things that they've changed in the Blu-ray editions.
Oh, God. Okay, because that's what we had.
Yeah.
And what, you had the Blu-ray?
Yeah.
Now, did it have the added no at the end where Vader chucked the Emperor down the pit?
Yes.
We have the DVD.
What a load of...
And, of course, it doesn't have that.
No.
And it's just...
Which is good.
Yeah, that's scene...
That's the definitive version.
Yeah. That scene at the end of Episode 3 was shit. And you don't make that scene less shit by inflicting that same shit at the end
no.
of Jedi, which it didn't need it, and it robbed it.
Well, because it robbed it of its power.
All you needed was him watching Luke being electrocuted by the Emperor.
And then just picking him up.
And then just, you know, looking at the Emperor, looking back to Luke, looking back at the Emperor, and you could see, he just decided that was it. He made his decision.
And in that, for me, when I originally saw that, and even now when I see it, without the no, it's a lot more powerful emotionally than the whole voiceover dub of no. Because to me, I'm just sat there going, what? No? No.
Well, Vader's shouting no. I'm shouting no with a few extra words.
It's just
words.
Bizarre.
That wouldn't get in a Universal rated film. Because it's, no, he doesn't need it.
With that bit, though, I mean, because he's basically picking up the Emperor, and he's already got one arm chopped off.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, is he balancing the other half of him on his stump or something?
It's
just the robotics,
that.
Isn't it? It's just the using strength for the robotics.
Yeah. See, why didn't he just pick him up with using the Force?
Because it's more powerful.
Well,
he's
the
one-armed man picking him up and... chuck him over.
The likelihood of being able to pick up the Emperor or do anything to him with the Force would be very low, really, I would say.
He might sense that coming, to be fair, and then just...
Yes,
exactly.
Mind you,
the other thing is...
Oh, I was going to say, speaking of sensing, though, so one thing obviously I noticed in, obviously it's apparent in Return of the Jedi, but the whole... Oh, it looks, Luke's all like, it seems Vader's kind of sent to be out, and maybe even the Emperor too. Mm. Oh dear. And then looking back at how things went down in the part three, in the prequels. And like, nobody knew anything was coming at all. Mm. And it was like, nobody was taught how to guard their thoughts that well. At least Anakin wasn't. You know?
No, but I think... Because the Emperor couldn't actually sense Luke, could he, in Episode 6? It was only Darth Vader who could. And I'm assuming that's because of his parentage.
So I think
he's going to have a stronger bond. But it was mentioned
in... Nobody could sense what was going on, except for,
Yoda did, didn't he?
Yoda did
sense something, but he couldn't see anything properly because of the... the visions were scrambled by the dark side, weren't they? By the Emperor.
You could say that Yoda was... too old for this Sith.
That's part terrible, part awesome.
But I'm just saying that they're just kind of like making out though that there weren't at least a few more Jedi that were of a reasonable kind of ability that they couldn't sense.
Or just general unshitness.
Yeah.
As I would term it. The whole thing with Anakin and Padme. Just that bit right near the end where Obi-Wan, goes to talk to her and says that he's done some bad things and, where was the last place you saw him and where would I find him? Because, we need to stop him.
Mm.
Mm.
First of all, she's going, no, I don't believe it. And apart from that bit where he said that he killed an entire village of, sand people.
Mm. Yes.
Because of his mum. But other than that... All the weird way you keep saying, the Jedi don't respect me and I need more power. Apart from all that, I honestly didn't see this coming. And just where Obi-Wan turns around and says, the child's yours, Anakin's, isn't it? I honestly thought that they must have known but let Anakin and Padme just, continue. You sort of turned a blind eye, but it's just...
They say love is blind, don't they? And Obi-Wan sort of loved Anakin like his son by the end, so...
I don't know why, because he's an arsehole. He's a weird...
But they all had hope that he was the chosen one that was going to bring balance to the Force.
Well, he did.
In the end, he did, yeah. In a
just
roundabout,
in a sort of, very brutal way.
But he also did redeem himself at the end of 6.
You know, the one thing that gets me, though, is that in, the first... I think it's the original trilogy, especially Episode 4 and 5, is that they keep on referring to the Jedi as basically a religion. And I'm not entirely sure whether that would be technically classed as a religion, per se. Not with, you know, the information from, you know, episodes 1, 2, and 3. Although 1 we kind of ignore, but yeah.
Yeah, it just kind of wanders off from that definition. You could tell he was changing his mind about...
Yeah, what exactly it was.
Yeah. And thankfully, I think there was only ever one mention of midichlorians in... Was it episode 2?
Yeah.
So, let us never speak of midichlorians again.
It is the Force. Mm. That is all you need to know. So there.
Yeah. I mean, as you know, structured as they are, I think it worked a lot better in the Machete Order.
Oh, I totally agree. It made more sense in the Machete Order.
Yeah.
You had the build-up. You had 4, introducing it to Luke and everybody else. You had 5, with the whole, I'm your father, sort of build-up. Then the flashback, 2 and 3, definitely worked a lot better for me. Definitely. The fact that you got rid of Jar Jar Binks for most of it, just an added plus.
Hmm. Although the fall of the Republic was ultimately Jar Jar's fault, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Seeing he was a stupid arsehole who said, yeah, it's a good idea to give the Chancellor military powers. Mm.
That's the one thing that I hated about Amidala's character.
Yeah.
That basically, obviously, we're not kind of going too heavily into it, but episode 1, she's kind of a queen. Episode 2, she's kind of, you know, a senator or something for her, you know, world. For Naboo. And by episode 3, she kind of diminishes in power.
Episode 3, I don't know why she was there.
Yeah.
She was a plot device. She could have been a cardboard cutout. I mean, in episode 2, the whole character didn't really make much sense. Because you had the whole Anakin being a spoiled little creepy, obsessive arsehole. And she goes, oh, how charming. And then in the 3rd one, she's just such a bloody awful character in the 3rd film. I have no idea why she's there.
I mean,
apart from well, someone has to give birth to Luke and Leia, I suppose, so we'll have to keep her around, give her a few lines.
But yeah, she just seems to have diminished in power, which is... Because, I mean, when it comes to the original trilogy, you know, admittedly, you know, Princess Leia, not exactly, you know, a feminist icon or anything, but by the same token, during episode 4, you know, even though she is the one that gets rescued, she's the one that kind of starts to kind of think about ideas about how, you know, where to go to basically jump down the shaft and whatnot, rather than, you know, kind of staying there and trying to blast your way.
She's also the one that, you know, manages to get the Death Star plans and stuff out of the place of the, you know, the first time round. So,
and you know, it's obvious from the talking before the battles as well that she is a bit of a kind of mastermind of the strategy behind it.
Meanwhile, poor Padme just there to have increasingly ludicrous outfits over the courses of the film. Except for the third, you know, episode 3, where she's just kind of like, these are various variations of space-faring maternity clothes. There we go. That was pretty much what most of her outfits in 3 ended up becoming.
Yeah.
I mean, I can really see how she had trouble after, you know, being in the Star Wars films. Because it was the whole, you know, some people thought she couldn't act.
Hmm.
There was really nothing for her to work with.
I quite like Natalie Portman. She seems all right.
I like Natalie Portman. I remember I first saw her in Leon the Professional.
Hmm.
Yes.
I think that was basically her breakout, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yes, it was.
First part.
She's quite good in Black Swan as well.
Yeah, I've not seen that yet, but yeah, I liked her and go, oh, you know, she's in it, good, and I like Ewan McGregor, good. And then you see them having to deliver this bloody dialogue in the prequels, and you go, oh, God, I feel really sorry for you.
Mm.
And it's like, you know, clear your mind, my young Padawan. Shut up. The dialogue is nowhere near that clunky in the original films, and I think the difference is
he seems more natural in the original films. Seems more natural and more free-flown.
Well, infamously, didn't what's his face? Harrison Ford. Yeah. I was trying to remember which one. Harrison Ford said, "You know, you can write this shit, George, but you can't say it." And it's just, yeah, I wonder how much reworking the dialogue.
Ad-libbing.
Yes.
Ad-libbing.
I can take these words, which are just such clumsy shit, and actually deliver them as, you know, naturalistic dialogue.
There's a lot, and it's not just that, but a lot of the conversations in the prequels are overly long. Like, there's a ton of exposition in them, and it's like, you could have just shown us the thing, you know?
Yeah.
You've got all this, you could have shown us the thing. Mm. Rather than have two characters clumsily talking about it.
I think with the original trilogy as well, they did go to a certain extent some way to kind of explain the technology at least a little bit. Whereas, you know, in the prequels, it's just like, oh yes, there's, you know, this kind of modernist kind of society already there. And, you know, there's no kind of... There doesn't seem to be kind of this generation of technology that's progressed. You know, kind of between them.
Well, there are kind of reasons for that in some of the fiction, which is pretty much that the technology has plateaued.
Okay.
Because I think it was first in Star Wars: Knights of the Old Republic, where they explain the whole thing as it's pretty much the same, even though it's set at least centuries before the films. That, yeah, they've pretty much just, you know, things have been iterating for so long that the technology is just as it is. Mm. There's not really much you can do because, you know, they've worked out the best way to make hyperspace, the best way to, you know, do, you know, blasters and things like that. And it's just, you have variation, you don't really have, you know, technological advancement.
Mm. It's either that or they've got the biggest technological monopoly in operation and we never see it. but actually, that's the real power, not the Emperor. Because that's just a theory.
It's definitely not Apple because everything would have been obsolete within about 3 years of them buying it.
Mm. But now, when it comes to the characters, I actually prefer A New Hope. Basically because you have kind of this concept of almost like building a party slowly as the film goes on. Whereas every other film, it's like everybody's already introduced and it's just, you know, going here and doing this or going there and doing that. You kind of meet a couple of people like Lando and whatnot, but they never feel part of the main crew, as it were.
Well, I don't know. Lando was always a good character for me. I like Lando.
I like how his character kind of changes over the two films that he's in.
Good old Billy Dee Williams.
And even though he's not in, you know, that long in Empire, he's still got a more varied range of character than pretty much everyone in the prequels.
Yeah. That's very true.
Definitely.
It's just, I'm glad I watched the prequels, you know, like this, because you know, that's self-contained within the story. Because otherwise, I can't understand anyone who would say that they prefer the prequels. Because I thought, okay, you know, I've seen them all before, and I can, you know, just watch them as films now. Even though I freely admit to when it comes to watching A New Hope and Empire Strikes Back, I am around 11 again.
Yes.
Watching them because they just are. That's just how, you know, how they get me. But at least now I can watch them and say, well, there's no real reason for that happening, or, you know, that seems a bit weird. You know, that, you know, you just have this character go off and do this, and no one would notice. But when it comes to the prequels, I thought, you know, as you know, with Avengers. You know, when I first watched that, I just didn't, you know, like it that much. And, you know, went back, rewatched it, enjoyed it a lot more. When it came to the prequels, it's like, yeah, this is just making them seem a bit worse. Because I remember episode 2 being better than the one which doesn't exist, for the sake of my own sanity.
Hmm.
And I was thinking, Christ, if this is actually better than Phantom Menace, then how bad would Phantom Menace be now if I, you know, sat down and, you know, just tried to watch it as, you know, part of the experience?
I think the best one out of the prequels is definitely the third one.
Yes, I would agree with
that. Just because of its dark tone.
Yeah.
I don't know, I'd say the out of the prequels, it's probably the second one's probably the better one.
Nah.
Because the third one really... It kind of has this thing where it's like it's already established certain things, and it's already got, you know, kind of after like a generation, you know, the the original trilogy has got to do, and I can see it trying to fill the gap, but it does it in such a way that is so clunky and clumsy that I feel it doesn't work properly.
Oh, they both are clunky and clumsy. Which is why, you know, I said about, you know, they feel like fan films. The third one, to me, a little bit less so, because at least it does actually move. I mean, I was checking the time.
It's got more of a story, hasn't it?
Yeah, to me. Just the fact that Anakin turns about halfway through.
Yeah, it adds a bit more dilemma to it.
Yeah, so you've got more going on there. Whereas in the second one, I mean, apart...
To me, that always seemed fragmented, how it all came about.
Yeah. I mean, the second one, you've got... this lot are building a droid army. This is a problem because we don't have an army because the Republic is so lovely.
Mm.
Yeah.
And then they find out that someone has been, commissioning a clone army. But it would be under the control of the Republic. So, they can use that. Isn't that convenient? To combat this clone army, which is, this sudden threat. And basically, that's all you really need from the second film. You just need the explanation that there was a droid army being built.
Yeah.
And, you know, by separatists. And, they suddenly had this clone army, which, you know... pretty much landed in their lap and said, well, we've got no choice but to use them now.
And nobody ever thought it was suspicious that they were just there ready for him. That's what got me. My thoughts were, why? Why has somebody been building these in the, you know, in the back of beyond for no apparent reason whatsoever?
In a way, it's kind of one of those things where, you know, they should have known where things were leading. When it comes to thingy and the Emperor being like one of the same,
that's all part. Yes, he's a Sith Lord and blah blah. It's been a while since I've had a powerful Sith and etc. But Christ's sake, all these I can sense your thoughts, really. Because you seem to be phenomenally shit out of sensing anything that's going on with any other people around you. You can't work out that them two are together and, you know, she's pregnant with his child, even though they're, you know, they're supposed to forsake these relationships when they're in the Jedi Order. You can't tell that your boss is a Sith.
Everyone's very adequate and able to do their job. And I just can't help but think what the Jedi Order would have been like if they'd had something like Cerebro just help them out a bit. Since the good ones and since the Sith, it'd all been fine.
Yeah, but someone can actually do something.
I mean, in a way, you know, if things would have gone differently throughout so many points in the entirety of the Star Wars saga, you know, you just basically
killed Jar Jar in the first one, and then
he wouldn't have been able to fuck up in the second.
Yeah.
So that's the plot of like. Episode 8, somebody will go back in time and shoot Jar Jar.
Changing the course of events of history.
What, Sith Net?
Oh, no, but... it's like, what... If the Jedi Council would have found out that Anakin not only is a complete tosspot, but also...
Which no one noticed.
Yeah.
I would love to know.
It's like, he's a bit arrogant and young and it's like, yeah.
Yoda had his reservations, didn't he?
Yeah, but he didn't do anything about it. He's just like, no, send him off on the mission. I'm sure he'll be fine.
Fine he will be, yes.
Meanwhile, as a result of his actions, Yoda lost his walking stick by the end of episode 3.
But I mean, what about if Han Solo hadn't have been on Mos Eisley in episode 4? For whatever reason.
Yeah.
True.
It really is the original the original films, the original trilogy were self-contained and they didn't need the prequels.
No.
Absolutely.
There's a little bit that's explained and as I've said, the latter half of episode 3 especially does kind of kick things off with the whole you had this Republic and it was scared of this threat, so it militarized and removed some of the freedoms. And the whole ethical concern of having a clone army where a lot of their individuality has been removed, so they just follow orders and you can send them in and not have to worry about it because they can just keep getting replaced. That's not addressed. No one really seems to have an issue with that. So... I do feel like there's a much better story hidden there.
But there is. But they didn't tap into it.
Yeah, it's just so hidden and presented in such a leaden way. Leaden direction, leaden pace, leaden dialogue, and half the time them having to act against nothing. Because so much of it was blue screened.
Yeah.
And one of the massive... things which I think people have learned from it was with J.J. Abrams, who again, if you listened before, I'm not his biggest fan, thanks to the Star Trek films, but him saying that they had to have as much as possible of the new film actually physically exist for people to act in, around,
must have
on
taken them a while to build to make that destroy them.
I think that might be one of the exceptions.
No, that was made out of Lego bricks, if you look closely.
Did anyone see that clip from In the Thick of It today? That's been going around, and I tweeted it.
No, I didn't.
Where he's trying to explain what... he's talking to Ollie, one of the junior characters, and he can't remember what film it is that he likes, so he describes it. And it's just fantastic. If you're a fan of Peter Capaldi and the Malcolm Tucker character in particular, it's just a fantastic description of it, because he says the hairdresser and the cowboy, and he's got a tin man and a flip bin, and he fucking fucked his sister. And they're all made of Lego, and he's got Star Wars. Yes, that's the one. And it's just, that's a fantastic description for anyone who hasn't seen it.
But now, I think you're right when it comes to the original trilogy. You didn't need anything before, because you had, kind of references to, the Clone Wars and whatnot. And I think it should have stayed as references, because not only did they actually do a butt-chop job of the original... of the prequel trilogy, but they made it so that certain things didn't make sense.
Yeah,
when you actually couple it together as a universe.
Yeah, it's just, come on, it's your story, George Lucas. How on earth can you get things wrong when you're doing prequels?
Well, that's what I couldn't get, 'cause apparently when he actually went to do episode 4, he'd already outlined episodes 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, and 9.
Wow.
Yeah, but I mean, there's a difference between outlined and,
Well, that's what I mean. I mean, so, if it's already outlined, how can you go so far
wrong, yeah.
Well, there was the whole thing of him changing the Luke Leia. Because so far as I know, it's fairly obvious in the first two films that it's kind of a love triangle thing going on.
Mm.
And then it's, oh, hang on, let's make her, you know, his sister. And give her, you know, force powers, kind of, or, you know, a bit of force awareness.
Well, that also backfired on the poor author, didn't he?
Hey?
There was a book, Splinter of the Mind's Eye, which I think Emily and Paul should read, that was set between Empire and Return of the Jedi. And because he thought it was a love triangle, it got a bit dicey.
Ooh.
Ooh.
What, in a kind of Twilight-y way?
Yeah.
Oh, dear.
Absolutely. Yeah. Still a good book, though.
Mm.
You can obviously tell that he had no idea what was going on.
Now, what I want to know, right, is, you know, we've watched these films. When are we going to watch the Ewok film?
Hey, what, Battle of Endor? Battle of Endor Moon?
Mm.
I'll watch it next week. I don't mind watching it.
Because I remember renting
Emily,
that.
Paul?
Are you even aware that exists?
No.
Yeah, there's an Ewok film.
Live action, a bunch of kids get, crash land on Endor. And they go on adventure with the, you know, with the Ewoks.
Ewoks.
Before they're, rescued. Because I rarely see that mentioned, because people talk about the holiday special, because that's famously shit. But I don't really hear about, you know, the live action as well, because there was a Ewoks in a cartoon series, and there was a Droids cartoon series.
Yes. Droids cartoon series was ace. I like that.
I don't think I saw much of it. I saw more of the Ewoks cartoon. I think we're just alienating Emily and Paul.
There was actually two. There was two Ewok films.
I thought there were, but I couldn't stick my life on it.
There was The Battle for Endor, but the first one was actually The Caravan of Courage.
Now, that title there should tell you all you need to know about the quality.
And in The Battle for Endor, they're fighting against the evil marauders.
Who are what? I can't remember. That's why I'm asking.
Led by Terek and his witch-like sorceress Char-El.
No.
Yeah. It's just no. Even when I watched it when I was little, because it was more Star Wars. God damn it! Why would I say no to that? Even when I saw it, when I was little, and it was more Star Wars, I had the vague suspicion it was a bit shit.
I
wonder if it's on Amazon.
One thing I was thinking, because it's the first time I've probably rewatched the films in a while, and
same here actually. It's been a while since.
It's been a while.
Because watching out for strong female roles is something I tend to do these days compared to when I was a kid or a teenager, really watching them. And Padme's just useless. And there aren't really many female characters in the prequels that are there and have any real presence. And then, obviously, in the original films, like at least Leia does become quite kick-ass. A little bit kick-ass, reasonably kick-ass, and can do things a bit for herself.
Well, I mean, she obviously, when she's first rescued, she's a little bit kick-ass then. But she doesn't know how to fly, so she can't be kick-ass in the battle scenes.
She's kick-ass in attitude.
That she is, yeah.
Definitely.
The way she
deals with Jabba is pretty good.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yes, as soon as she gets a chance, throws him.
Yeah, that was a really good moment in the Return of the Jedi. But it's just, it makes me wonder, I'm just kind of glad that at least there seems to be a female character visible in the trailers for episode 7.
Yeah.
Yes.
Because it But I'm also hoping there might be a few more female characters, or it's going to be like the other films again, in that it's a sausage fest, basically. It's like, you can't ignore that side of the market and, you know, just not have much representation.
No. I mean, yeah, these days. When you have stupid, shitty CG aliens getting more screen time and dialogue than any female character, it's just...
Yeah.
There's something going wrong. I mean, there was... I don't know whether it's apocryphal or not, but A New Hope is noticeably white.
Mm.
And apparently this was pointed out to George Lucas, and that's one of the reasons why... it's one of the reasons why Vader has, you know, his that voice. But it's like, quick, cast a black guy. Otherwise it might look a bit bad. I'm not sure if it really counts if it's just a voice.
Especially when it's like he's dressed in black and he's evil.
Yeah.
Bloody excellent voice.
Yeah.
I recently saw some footage of the original actor.
Oh, yeah. Was it David Prowse?
Yeah, who's from Somerset.
Yeah.
David Prowse, who wasn't allowed to be under the mask in Return of the Jedi. Instead, that was Sebastian Shaw.
Really? Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, when his helmet's taken off, yeah.
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 And when he's the ghost.
Although now it's bloody Anakin, isn't it?
Yeah.
He still manages to look creepy.
I don't get why Anakin is, in his younger days, but Obi-Wan is still old. In ghost form.
My issue with that. It should be just a non-injured version of
Sebastian Shaw. Yeah, definitely.
I mean, one of the good things about Disney buying, you know, Star Wars from Lucas is the news that they will be releasing the original unaltered cinematic ones.
Really?
They're going to be releasing those on disc.
That's actually quite exciting, to be honest.
I'd like, because the only time I've ever seen Jabba the Hutt, not as a slimy worm thing, it was watching
a documentary on making of
how they turned Jabba into slimy worm thing.
Yeah, and couldn't help but think when watching that CG looks shit. I hope it looks better in the film. And look better in the film.
My issue was that they when Han Solo's actually walking around him, because obviously they make him stand on the tail, but they also have to make him do that a bit faster, so you kind of see a little bit of kind of blur, as that's like motion blur as he's kind of going around, which made it look even worse, because you're doing that with actual footage rather than CG.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's so much of that bothers me, just with the alterations, the musical number that they do in Jabba's palace at the start of Jedi.
Yes.
That's a bit over the top.
And it's weird, but all the alterations that they make in it, and all the stuff that's from the prequels, makes it seem more American.
Yeah.
Less alien, more American.
I mean, there were some... I think the only alterations I liked was the end of Jedi, when you saw the celebrations on the other planets.
Yeah.
That was quite a nice touch. I like that.
That was quite a nice touch. I actually liked that.
But the rest of it was absolutely worthless.
Oh, hang on. Some of the alterations I quite liked were in Cloud City.
Oh, yeah, the CGI in Cloud City, when they're actually getting taken in by the two vehicles instead of just seeing sort of one and then drift off into the clouds. And that was cool.
And there are a few bits where it's just a nice touch that it exists. Because, of course, in the original ones, you didn't see an outside apart from, you know, when they land.
Yeah.
And there are several ones where they've taken windows which were just blank.
Or and just put the actual
wall panels, and they put an outside view of the city. with some those flying parts, and it's like, yeah, those actually work because they're not too intrusive. They're not, you know, like most of the other alterations where it's, look at what we've done. We put computery things on. Clap for us. No, I'm not going to because what you've done is awful.
But I mean, I think in, what was it, episode 4, where they, when they're first coming into, I think it's Mos Eisley, on the kind of hover speeder kind of... you can kind of see a couple of scenes where they've added like a couple more kind of stormtroopers here and there, you know, just kind of beef things up. And those stormtroopers, if you were to, you know, press pause, they'd look absolutely fine. But if you press play, the movements, they're just not quite right.
Out of sync.
The movements just do not look right. And also... They seem to have an obsession with adding little comedy bits.
Yes.
With creatures
like
and other things
Jabba's
like that.
Tail.
Yeah, that one I can, you know, if you're going to have the scene there and just as a, you know, why didn't he just, you know, the whole issue with, well, it'd stand on his tail. Yeah, but if because it's zoomed in at that particular point anyway and you don't see that, is it really that much of an issue? Just leave it in there and hope that no one thinks of it.
That they probably could have had actually a cutaway shot to somebody else going,
yes! just have it so that, you know, hands start walking in that direction and it cuts to a shot of, you know, one of the, you know, the guards, you know, fidgeting with a gun or something like that, or, you know, just, you know, the, oh, you know, Solo's pulling this shit again. You know, sort of expression. Oh, Solo. You know, that kind of expression. And then just cut back to when he's, you know, walking around the side. And don't bother with the, oh, look, comedy, because he stood on Jabba's tail. No, don't do that.
We didn't actually meet Jabba in the original theatrical release, though, did he?
No. The first time you see Jabba is in... You know, he's mentioned, obviously, but you don't see him until Jedi.
He's not actually seen until Jedi.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to ask one last critical question, and then we're going to have to wrap things up. And so the critical question is, who shot first?
Solo.
Greedo. Solo.
Solo.
In our version, they shot at the same time.
Yeah, they kind of...
I thought Greedo did, because he missed, didn't he?
Greedo did miss, but... Yeah.
In the altered
version. You see the burn mark
version.
In the back.
Yeah.
In the original version, it was definitely Solo that shot first.
Well, in the original version, Greedo didn't shoot, did he?
No.
Because he was just, you know, Han just quick. Shot him under the table. Yeah.
Yeah, he just wasn't quick enough.
Which establishes him as a rogue.
Yeah. It works.
Right,
can we all just agree that, you know, Lucas desperately needed someone, you know, just to stand there and say no?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, I'm going to, you know, I'm going to pay you. I can't fire you. And you just, you know, you just stand there and be 100% honest. Because everyone else is just going to say, that's a great idea, George. Yeah, let's have a musical number there. Or let's do something shit. Or that dialogue isn't fucking awful and doesn't make my eyes bleed. That's all fine, yes. You know, if you keep saying young Padawan or, keep, you know, whatever, it will be great and everyone will love it. And, you know, that Jar Jar character, genius. Just have someone, you know, standing there going, that's fucking shit, George. That's, no, just don't do that. Just, George, Christ's sake, man, just back away. No, you're going in the corner.
Step over the camera. Do not, George, say action.
In the just sit in the corner, look at the corner.
I would say if people are wondering where to go next in terms of Star Warsness before obviously Episode 7 is released, Marvel's obviously started doing new comics now on the Star Wars.
Yeah, and some of the original stories, the novels are really good as well.
Yeah, but obviously you'll be careful because it's like, do you want to get invested in stuff that is now in the new canon or out of the new canon is the only problem.
Yeah, okay. But if you want some nostalgia, Amazon do have the Star Wars Ewok Adventures, Caravan of Courage and the Battle for Endor on a dual DVD. However, if you're going to pay these prices, please, please, please do not come running to me.
Yeah.
Because I've just nearly fainted at the prices of it.
I think other places to go which aren't actually, you know, places to look at stuff to do Star Wars, but not aren't actually Star Wars. I think if you haven't seen Fanboys, you should watch that. And also just watch Clerks, mainly, you know, for various conversations about Star Wars over the course of the film.
Well, on a serious note, the new cartoon series Rebels is actually quite good.
I have heard a lot of good things about that.
It's actually really good.
And for added things, I would recommend playing the first Star Wars Force Unleashed.
Yes.
Which has got quite a decent story. I'm not sure about the second one. I own it, but I've never played it.
I heard lots of complaints about it when it came out.
It was alright. It wasn't as good, but it was alright.
But when it comes to, if you want a good storyline, you can't go
Knights of the Old Republic.
Yeah, Knights of the Old Republic 1 and 2. And you'll be sitting there watching the films forevermore, saying, why can't HK-47 be in these? Because he's brilliant.
All right, well, that's all we've got time for this week.
Stiller.
That's all we've got time for this week. So it is goodbye from...
It's good night from me, Paul Wood. I'm Retroid on Eurogamer.net, Super Retroid on Twitter.
It's good night from me, Paul, a.k.a. OneArmed_Cookie.
It's good night from me, Paul Blewett. I'm on Twitter as @PaulBlewett.
It's good night from me, Emily King. I'm on Twitter as EK6891. You can find NerdAssemble over at www.nerdassemble.co.uk. You can also find us on Facebook and Google Plus, Nerds Assemble Podcast. We're on Twitter at Nerds Podcast. If you listen to us through the site and you want to subscribe somewhere, we are available on iTunes and Stitcher. If you feel like you want to go read more stuff somewhere about anything, check hexdimension.com because it's lovely over there. And that's it. I believe no princesses were harmed in the making of this podcast this week.
Well, apart from the one in the... Well, one corner there and one corner there.
Oh. Oops.
It was a lightsaber accident.
Oops. Good night.
Good night.
Good night. May the force be with you.
Night. Good.